Hey, welcome back to Public Words Project. It's been a while. This podcast, as you well know, we cover different stories and different careers. This particular podcast is about the real life of acting and a good friend of mine who's an actor, the ups and downs of this profession. This is a personal sort of interview with a gentleman I've known since I was 15 years old. There's going to be some laughter, some cursing, some real life shares. So listen in, learn, laugh, and enjoy. Sitting in front of me, I call him Bardo. I've known this gentleman for a long time, and I just can't wait for you guys to get to know this guy. So Lombardo, Boyar, tell me who you are and where you're from.
As she said, my name is Lombardo Boyar. I'm from El Paso, Texas. I was actually born Lombardo Noé Hernández.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Actually, you knew me as Bardo always, but yeah, when we were growing up in Southgate, I was a Hernández, and because the guy that I thought was my father was not my father. And I didn't find that out till I was 19 years old.
Whoa!
Yeah, so she didn't even know. Boom!
Oh my God.
Dysfunction makes you function.
Can we cheer on that?
I love
that.
Cheers.
That's a cheers right there. Right there. We're going to put that on a t-shirt.
That's right. Yeah, I love that. Wow, and that just came out. Dysfunction makes you function. It's the truth, you know. And like, so that's basically, I'll start off that way. Because, I mean, I was somebody else. I was named after a guy who was my dad.
Yeah.
You know, until I was 19. And the funny thing is, my mom broke the news to me. Mm-hmm. I went to go meet my real father at this diner, at this restaurant. She wanted me to wear my army greens. And I was like, this is weird. So anyways, we are having this dinner with this guy, and he looks really familiar, and he's asking me all these personal questions. But I'm still thinking, honestly, I was thinking, okay, this is mom's new guy, and she wants me to approve of him.
Okay, yeah, well, that's a new situation, right?
So anyways, but no, and then on the way home, she broke down crying and then told me that was my father. Yeah,
damn, dude.
Yeah, that's deep.
But so, that's, I mean, thank you for sharing that, because that's a reality for a lot of people.
Yeah, for a lot of people. And the funny thing is, you know, she was taking it so hard, and because I had grown up so dysfunctional, you know, moving from house to house, you know, fights, you know, drugs, alcohol. Mm-hmm. You know, when you grow up Latino, unfortunately, that's what you do. There's a lot of drinking going on. Somebody's got drinking, or that's how you're brought up. That's what you see. So, you know, monkey see, monkey do. Mm-hmm. So through all the dysfunction, everything, when she broke it to me, I was kind of like, okay, what's the big deal? Why are you crying?
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it really didn't mean much to me. And then I got to know him later, and, you know, we're not talking now, but, you know, but still, I know him, I've met him, we know of each other, you know, he followed me on Facebook, but, you know, my father was my grandfather.
Okay.
In El Paso, Texas, okay. Alfredo Boyar, which is why I took his last name.
All right.
And
that's happened in so many Latino families and so many families of color, like this lineage of lies, or like father is brother, uncle, or sister's mother, and it's just like, there's just so much kind of like social graces or social decorum behavior. It's much better now, just to be honest, and like this is what's going
on. Oh yeah,
definitely.
This is what's going on, man. Yeah, and not hide it anymore. And I think, you know, I mean, not to get too deep, but yeah, I think that's why people are so sensitive now, because there isn't as much dysfunction in these new families, and they're bringing up these kids that are great. I mean, that have had a great upbringing. Mm-hmm. So the first time something goes wrong, they lose their shit. I mean, I think that's the problem. You know, it's almost, I mean, you know, not make it tough on them, but don't try not to make it too easy, I would say.
Right, you know that everyone gets a trophy kind of mentality.
Exactly.
Like, you and I had to break bones to get
the
trophy.
Yeah, I mean, you had to get the trophy. You have to struggle. You have to suffer, you know?
So you answered what your name is, and you answered where you're from, and then we met each other and grew up together in a city called Southgate / and you were in
Hollydale.
You were in the nice part, man. Yeah. You guys had horses, and you had the riverbed.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we didn't have it long. You know, as I said, I think we moved to two houses there in about 10 years. Yeah, we lived next to the Vieiras.
Oh God.
Uh huh. When we were there. Yeah. And then
the mirrors are close to my heart.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. I don't know if I want to get into it, but great friends. And then my mom lost that house, and then we moved to a house down the street on the corner. If you remember that, we had the white house on the corner for a long time.
I do remember that.
And that house is the one that I joined the army in.
Really?
Yeah, that's where I went to the MEPS. The MEPS station that I went to join the military in is the one that burned down during the riots when I was in basic training. Crazy.
It is crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, Bardo and I grew up in Southgate, Hollidale, and like, you were a little skater guy, skating around, busting your ankles. Remember when you busted your ankle
Oh yeah, I
skateboarding?
broke my ankle skateboarding, yeah. and then that's the other thing. I broke my ankle skateboarding, and I would still get on my skateboard and with my crutches ride it like a ski. You know, I would just push up. I was hardcore, man. And the funny thing is, look, I'm wearing an independent trucks hat.
Yes, you are.
And that is my, right now, that is my meditation. That is my peace right now. I still go skate. I live in Tarzana, mm-hmm. and there's Pedlo Skate Park. Shout out to Pedlo.
hashtag you.
Yeah, hashtag Pedlo Skate Park. So I go there, and you know, I feel young again. It takes me back. And believe it or not, I'm a better skateboarder now at 46 than I was when I was younger. It's
why?
Crazy.
Why do you think so?
I think I don't do the same thing, the same dumb thing twice. I mean, if something goes wrong, I actually try to figure out what went wrong.
Well, you know, skating, you do it anymore. Wrong, you do it again, you do it
yeah,
again,
you do it again,
and
again.
Like,
but
yeah.
I try to just, I really think about it more before I get hurt again. You know what I mean? I break it down. And I go, okay, what went wrong? Because if I get hurt, I mean, I am 46. My bones, you know, aren't as.
So you say that because like when we were younger, like. I went on, so Wednesday night, I am a part of a group called LA County Bicycle Coalition.
Oh, nice.
And we're just like a bunch of bicycle geeks and trying to get more bikes on the road, less cars off the road. But 28 cyclists were killed in Los Angeles last year.
Wow.
So there's something that I was invited to called the Ride of Silence.
Right.
So we rode through down from Mid-Wilshire to downtown LA in silence.
Wait a minute. Somebody kept you silent?
Yeah, we were all quiet.
You?
Me. Well, because, you know, I pedaled.
Oh, that was hard. That's hard right there for you.
Yeah, well, first of all, I violated it, just to let you know, because I didn't know, because I got there late, because I pedaled from WeHo all the way to Mid-Wilshire.
Singing?
And I caught them, and I'm like, I'm here. And they're all like,
shut up.
I'll tie them like, oops.
You ruined it. We got to start again.
But at the end, you know, we were all at City Hall talking about like people had been hit and stuff like that. And I go, yeah, I was hit when I was 12 back in Southgate. I go, back when I was bouncy. I'm like, I got hit, landed on the hood of the car, looked the woman in the eyes and said, I'm okay, got off the car. She took off. I go, now I'd get hit, splat, shatter on the hood. I'm not bouncy anymore. So like skating back then, you're bouncy. And you get back up and now it's like.
And it's funny, I got into it, back into it about 2 years ago. And like,
really?
Like an idiot, I went back into it hard.
Well, because like, we still think we're...
Yeah.
Oh, the mind's still young. The body's like, gonna remind you.
Pretty sure I probably fractured wrist. And then big hematoma I got on my forearm one time. Huge. I mean, the guy was like, oh, dude. I hit the coping on this half pipe so hard. Boom. And it left, and I was like, is it broken? Is it broken?
You
it wasn't
chichon,
broken.
Like, no, like,
huge, man. It was huge. Turned, of course, my whole arm turned blue. And then I'm pretty sure I cracked a rib, you know? Yeah. And then you can't do nothing about that. So luckily my injuries
you
were.
Can't, right?
You can't. I just sucked it up. And I didn't know I'd cracked a rib till, I mean, it hurt like hell mm-hmm. when it happened. And I got the sweats and everything. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm just hungover. But I wasn't. I was like, oh my God. It's like it hurt. I got the chills. And then like riding home, it's like, oh my God. But it wasn't as bad. It wasn't until like 2 weeks later mm-hmm. when I was going outside and I sneezed.
Well, I don't know why I'm laughing.
Fuck.
Because the truth is funny because I must have
killed.
The
fucking pain. Killed. I was like, and I went down on my knees again. I was outside. It was like I sneezed. I was like, oh shit. What the fuck is that? Down on my knees. So that's how I knew I had fractured something. But, you know, call the doctor's like, there's nothing you could do. I mean, yeah. I could give you a wrap or something, but that's it.
So what else do you do to keep, because, you know, I've known Bardo since we were kids. And then
all right, first of all, I mean, if I haven't said, I think we did. But yes, I'm a sometimes working actor. I used to say I'm a working actor all the time, but it's been slow these last 2 years, which is going to happen.
Yeah.
But I am an actor. And one of the reasons I'm an actor is sitting right in front of me. I mean, she's,
do that.
I don't know if you remember this, but she's the first one we did, when I was bullshitting and was just thinking about getting into acting, I went and read for this play in Silver Lake called This Is LA /Dogs. They were doing like a co-production.
Yeah.
And,
God, we were kids.
Yeah. I mean, I was fresh out of the army.
Yes, you were.
And I remember walking up there cause I had a stupid black shirt on. Cause you know, you remember these moments.
Oh my God, it was Galaxa Studios.
Galaxa Studios
on Sunset.
Studios
I think it's an Indian restaurant now.
That's right. It's an Indian restaurant. So yeah. So I'm walking up to this place in my, I've ever had these blue, like jean bell bottom pants mm-hmm. with my boots and like a tight black shirt.
Damn, you have a good memory.
Well, I remember that because, you know, it was a huge thing. I mean, I've never auditioned for a play. Mm-hmm. And it was my first play that I was going to go in and bullshit. And that's what I did. So I'm walking up to the theater and I see this curly haired woman out front. Mm-hmm. And then she turns and looks at me. And I remember we made eye contact and you went, Bardo? Yeah. And I was like, hey, Marie? I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. And then, like, unfortunately, I was auditioning for Dogs.
Right.
Not This Is L.A. Mm-hmm. So I went in and I read for Dogs, which they were never going to hire me because I think I made some bullshit monologue. I don't even think I knew what a monologue was. went in there and ranted and told this story and everything. But anyways, the point is, Anne-Marie saw me, and because I was her Southgate homeboy and she knew me. No, what are the odds? I mean, I was in the Army. I was gone. Like, we hadn't seen each other for years. I mean, I was a grown-up. I was an adult.
I didn't recognize you because I remember you being, like, the skater kid and... growing up being a skater kid, and then, like, here comes this, like, because I have to tell you, Bardo got really handsome. When puberty hit, so this really handsome guy's walking up to me, and I'm just like, I'm confused because I'm like, who is this guy? And then I bat for a different team, and I'm like, this guy's really handsome. And I'm like, wait, I know this guy. And it's just like, it was all serendipitous, and it was just beautiful.
She ain't lying. I mean, talk about a late bloomer. I was fucking ugly. All
no, you weren't ugly.
I just had bad acne.
You had
my
a nose
hair
your
was
face
crazy.
Had grown into.
Yeah.
That's all.
I did. I had bad acne, and, like, I don't think I went through puberty until I was, like, in 11th grade. No. So yeah, that's the reason I skated, you know, everything. And then the skateboarding kind of went
I remember your curly, your, like,
crazy
Mexican
curly
afro.
Hair. Oh, man, it was nappy.
Yeah, it was awesome, though.
Crazy. Yeah, I loved it. But, of course, I always want straight hair, right? People with curly hair always want straight hair. That's it.
Because, like, I have curly hair and everyone's like, straighten it. I'm like, you straighten this. See how long it lasts because it frizzes right up. But back
by the
to
way,
you.
Listeners, the noise you hear in the background are my dogs. Yeah. Hey, Romo, Picosa, out. Get over there. She's scratching. Come on. Go in the crate. All right. Carry on.
So that was very serendipitous about you. The universe, God, whatever one believes in. I mean, it was just very serendipitous and...
So I didn't get Dogs, going back to the story, but she pulled out a monologue that she had written for, and she made it part of her play, This Is L.A.
Yeah, you did really well.
Thank you. I remember that. But it was a great learning lesson for me. I mean, that's the thing about, you know, you're always learning as an actor. You know, I'm 46, and, you know, to you young listeners out there, anybody wants to get into acting or whatever, you know, save your money.
Yeah.
You know, save your money because you're going to hit, you know, some hard times. And especially, I have three young kids. I started having kids late for a Mexican. My oldest daughter is 6. My son just turned 5. Right. I'm serious. Like, most of my friends have their kids in college already or out of college, you know.
Yeah.
So I started late, but it was good. I had to. I can't
There's
imagine.
There's no rules anymore.
No, I know, but I couldn't imagine having them when I was younger. You know, I was crazy.
Well,
So
we both had really good times in our 20s and 30s.
Yes,
so
we did.
We're gonna leave it at that.
Exactly.
Because we're respectable adults now.
That's right. I have kids, damn it, and a mortgage, and no job. Yeah, which going back, you know, the family helps out a lot. Like, and my youngest is 2.5 now, and so they.
So what are your kids' names?
Little Stevie Lee Boyar, and then Mick Lombardo Boyar, and Birdie Lynn Boyar.
You're going with some very traditional names.
Traditional, yeah, a little bit Southern. My wife is from South Dakota originally.
Okay.
And then she grew up here
in
Hammond, California.
She's fantastic, by the way.
Thank you so much. I got so lucky. Yeah, Terry, you know, Terry probably saved me, you know, to be honest, or we saved each other, honestly.
Right.
And then, that's a reaction we both get all the time. It's like, you guys are married with kids? Because the kids like, yep. You know, we're the couple that people no one expected to be doing so well.
Right.
You know?
And that's fantastic.
Yeah,
and,
it's amazing.
And well earned. So going back to acting. So you, okay, so you're in the Army.
Yeah.
And I do remember being in San Francisco at a club with you and you fell asleep standing up, which I found amazing. And you're like, I learned that in the Army. But I was like, is he asleep? Because we're all dancing. You're against a corner in this club in Southgate asleep. And you were catching up on your
sleep. That's
the night we were
that.
Homeless in San Francisco.
Oh, we slept in the car. I remember you guys had to get me out of the car.
We had a gig. We were performing up there. But
overnight. Stay.
Well, the thing about the arts and acting, the things you do, right? It's not so glamorous, but
you do it for the love,
You do for love. So let's talk about you, and for the listeners of this podcast, you know, I always have a list of questions, but we're gonna just go with the magic of Bardo, and then we'll pop some of the questions in later.
Yeah, shoot 'em.
Let's talk about you. Like, how did you? When did you figure out you wanted to be an actor?
Oh, that's a great question. The military was my college. You know, I didn't go to college, so. I graduated from high school and in El Paso, Texas, believe it or not. Remember, I left like after 11th grade, senior year, I left after the first semester like an idiot because I wanted to graduate my friends in El Paso, Texas. So I went back there, I graduated, and then came back to LA, and I just didn't want to mooch off a mom. Kids, don't mooch off your parents.
No.
So anyways, so then I was like, okay, hey, I'm like, I don't know what to do. So the funny thing is my friend Nachos goes, hey, I'm going in the Army. Do you want to go in with me? They have this thing called the buddy system. And I'm like, okay. The buddy system. So if you're going together, you can go to basic together. You can go to job training together. So as you have the friend, right?
Okay.
So last minute, he backs out.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
okay.
He backs out on me last minute. Yeah. I'm like, dude, what? That's like, you, dude, we're ready. We're going. So I get all pissed off, whatever. But you know what? I'm like, you know what? Screw it. I'm going.
Yeah.
So I went anyways, but it was a blessing because when I was in basic, if you were in the buddy system, what do you think the drill sergeants made you do? Hold hands.
Oh, did they? Oh my
and
God.
Everyone gave you crap, of course. Oh, you had to bring your friend, huh? So you got so much shit. So actually, Nacho saved my ass.
Oh my God.
So I would have got so much shit. And then again, I do feel like I've lived the blessed life. Like even when it gets hard. So that's another reason when it's tough, I always kind of just relax, you know?
Yeah.
I'll go through every emotion and then I remind myself, hey, it's going to be all right. This too will pass, you know? So I get into basic there, two platoons. And I get lucky and they put me in the stress-free basic platoon. They're testing this new method.
Oh.
So they went old.
You are a lucky son
of a bitch. I'm telling you. So the first platoon, which was the platoon
Is
I was in.
Is that machine gun too heavy?
I'm serious.
You need a massage?
No. I mean, they were still hard on us. They still exercised us. They still exercised the shit out of us and they did everything. But I was in first platoon. So first platoon was this new stress-free basic method they were implementing. Second platoon, they went old school on. Oh my God.
Oh, A-B testing on you guys. Okay, all right, got it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So second platoon, God, oh man, we'd be going to sleep and we'd hear those guys out. I mean, we'd be sleeping and you'd still hear them out there like 2 a.m. just getting smoked by their drill sergeant. And I still remember him. He was the biggest, meanest African-American man you'd see. Now, this dude was scary.
Yeah, but like in the movies, is it like that?
I mean, we all knew at this point. I went in 92 to 94, yeah. So I already knew they couldn't hit us.
Okay.
You know, so they can't hit you. Okay. So. You know, all they could do is smoke you. And again, my dysfunction.
And when you say smoke, what is
that?
That
means
like
exercise you till you drop.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
And cruel exercises. They call this thing called a dying cockroach, where you're on your back with your legs and your feet up in the air, and they just leave you there. Stay there for as long as you can. And I mean, if you drop
people
your legs.
People pay for that now in
LA. I know, right?
That people pay for a lot of money for that in LA.
Yeah, and then there's another one, the chair, where you just put your back up against the wall, like you're sitting up a chair.
That's tough.
And you just sit there, and you better not drop. You know, so that's what they do. They can do all that stuff, but they can't hit you. So again, going back to my dysfunction, you know, that never bothered me. But you would see some guys lose it, like the first night of basic when they just screaming in your face, making you do all these exercises, kick your ass. I mean, and you're so tired. And I'm going to sleep. And then I hear, you hear these grown men crying, you know, because they've never experienced anything like that.
Dysfunction
makes you function. Wow, so again... Okay. So the Army, as tough as it was, the training was my favorite part.
Yeah.
Because everyone who's teaching you at that point is so gung-ho and so pressed. And, you know, they just have their shit together.
Yeah.
And you buy into, hell yeah, the Army. And then you get to your unit.
Okay.
Which is your unit is basically, and I went airborne too. So airborne school was amazing. You know, I jumped out of planes.
That's
which
awesome.
Which was an idiot. I got out with 26 jumps. Which sounds awesome. But again, I was kind of a Private Benjamin, you know. So I just talked a lot of shit, you know. Okay. Like, I mean, I never got busted. I pushed it to the limit where I would get Article 15 and then I wouldn't.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I got treated bad even then, you know, I was just being Mexican. I got passed over for a couple promotions that should have been mine.
Yeah.
You know, and literally they're just like, fuck you. You know, I have to give you a reason.
They're notorious for that, even back from WW2, so yeah.
Oh yeah, so, and you know, and so anyways, I made it a blast. I made great friends. I just reunited with some of them, you know.
Cool.
Yeah, and it's just... And one of them works for Disney, ended up here close. He's an animator, my friend Min Young, and he's doing really great.
Awesome.
Yeah, so it's just the Army, what, going back to why I got into acting, because in the military, like I said, you get to...
I knew we'd get there.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I was going to... You get to your unit, and then you see the real Army people.
Okay.
And I would say, and you know, no one, you know, look it up and don't get mad at me. I'm not, you know, I'm just throwing it out there, but I would say probably 70% of the people in there are miserable.
Okay.
And just do it because, you know.
It's your duty?
They know they have no one else. See, the thing is, once you get in the military, right, and you get married, you have a couple kids, right? What are you going to do, get out and just start from scratch with a family
that,
now?
No, I mean, that's so, a career. That's any career, that's right?
So a lot of people stay, you know, even though they're miserable. And I worked with a lot of miserable people in the military. The ones that I really loved, the ones that I really loved were the ones that truly loved it and were in there because they loved the military and they loved it. Man, but they were, you know, far and few in between. I mean, there was just...
That's fascinating.
Yeah, everyone in there is just too scared to get out. And that's what they tried to do. Like, when, before I got out, you know, the recruitment officer comes. He's like, what are you going to do out there, boy? There's nothing for you out there, man. I'll give you a $10,000 bonus right now, an assignment of your choice if you re-enlist. Or you're going to go out there and have nothing. Wow. I mean, so when they put it to you like that.
And I'm learning so much right now. I have to tell you.
No, seriously. So and that was 10 grand back then. I mean, I'm sure it's more now.
Yeah.
But it wasn't enough for me. And like, he kept coming after me. And like, finally, I literally had to say, sorry, sir, with all due respect, fuck off. Like, I don't want to stay in. Yeah. I'm leaving.
Yeah.
But that's when I decided the Army, because of those people and because I saw so many miserable people that just were too scared to get out and try anything else. Mm-hmm. And made other people miserable because they were miserable. Mm-hmm. And it just kept rolling on down. I was like, I don't like this. I was like, and I could see how much money I could make and how long it was going to take to get there.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't, that wasn't enough for me.
I have to applaud you for being at the age that we were back then to have the wherewithal and the wisdom to make that choice. You made a good life choice.
So definitely. Yeah. Because I didn't want to, I mean, that's what the Army taught me.
Yeah.
You know, just I saw what how miserable my life could be.
Okay. So you decided to go into acting.
So I said, I've always had that. No, to be more miserable. But at least I love it. And that's the truth. Yeah. I mean, you know, every job's going to be tough. Every job's going to have
So you go through all this, and then I need you to tell me when was the point where you're
I was in the Army, so I saw it. So I was like, well, what have I always loved? You know, what I always want to try? So I got out of the Army.
Okay.
No, and believe it or not, I had a friend at the, when I got out of the Army, I moved to Southgate again. Mm-hmm. No, a little further up. Right on the border of Long Beach. We were on Garfield. Remember where it's turned into Cherry as it went up?
Lakewood?
No, it was in Lakewood. I think it was I think it was Long Beach, right on the border.
Probably.
But my mom was living at a mobile home park. So when I got out of the Army, I moved in there with Lonnie at the time. Remember?
I remember that, yeah.
So when I left the military, I came home with a wife, big surprise. And she was actually a product of the Vietnamese War. Remember, her mom and dad met in Vietnam. And she was, you know, half American, half Vietnamese. And I was with her for 7 years, but we moved into a little mobile home park.
I remember that.
And I had a friend, Paul Gill, who was this, now looking back, he was the manager's husband who was seriously hooked on crystal meth. Like now when I think back, and I mean, when he had a button on sleeve on, you couldn't tell.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked so straight edge.
It's 105 degrees, you're like long sleeves.
So my mom gets me a job with him to go move mobile homes, which I lasted 2 weeks because it's fucking hard. You literally have to split a double wide in half and then put each piece on axles.
Okay.
Fuck yeah. It's a lot of work. And you have to get underneath the house and jack it up.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So I left.
Bardo, I didn't think I'd be learning all this stuff this morning. This is crazy? Amazing. Yeah, okay.
So anyway, so Paul Gill, he seems like straight up, you know, straight edge guy, everything. My mom says, hey, you got to go work with Paul today. Go to his house. Mm-hmm. So I'm knocking at his door at 8 a.m. I hear nothing. Then I hear from inside, hey, wait up, Holmes. I'll be right there. Mm-hmm. So he comes out completely different guy. I mean, he's got tats everywhere. He's like a Caucasian cholo. Totally, man. Totally. And, and then he throws me the keys. He's like, you're driving. Like, where were we driving? And at that time, he's Simi Valley, right? And we lived
That's
way down there.
Far.
That's over here. We lived over here. He tells me I'm driving, and he cracks a beer and lights a joint. And, you know, I was still so straight in. So I was like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, yeah.
But he's the guy that always told me I look like Sal Mineo.
Okay.
You know, he would always tell me, you should get into acting. You should get into acting. So actually, he's the one that kind of sparked it back then. And then, believe it or not, and again, being honest, I was one of those guys like Wilmer Valderrama. You didn't hear that. Who, and like Jessica Alba, who heard a commercial on the radio about acting. Hey, if you want to be an actor.
They did that a lot back then.
Yeah, if you want to be an actor, come down to the convention center, blah, blah, blah. And I won't mention the school because they were kind of shady. But yeah, we all went to that school and that's how we all got our start. You know, if you were from the hood, you know, or Southgate, not that we were hoodish, but still, you don't hear about acting over there and, you know, you don't know where to go.
Well, I want
to
stop you right there because that's why, I mean, as we were talking earlier, that's why this podcast is important to me.
No, I love it. Because that's why I'm here doing it, because you got to get it out there and you got to take chances, guys.
Yeah, especially from where we come from, working class, blue collar.
Yep.
Some say ghetto, some say whatever. Like, there's options that aren't presented to us. And that's why I want little Bardo's and Anne-Marie's and in Southgate and Compton and Watts and Inglewood to hear this and go, listen to this.
You can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. You can be moved to Tarzana. Hey, I love it. I love it, okay, man. So, no, I love my house. Yeah.
So you go to the school, you start acting, we bump into each other. So take me on the ride so people can learn.
Yeah. So we do that play and I think, and then, oh, from that school, I get a just one commercial agent, right? So they do a showcase and they call in, you know, agents and, you know, some of the agents are good, you know, they're going to come check it out. So, you know, I got one agent that wanted to see me.
Okay.
One agent, Jana Luker. I don't know.
And I just want to say that this was back before there were a lot of like people of color in, you know, because, you know, when you were doing it and I were doing it, it was like there weren't a lot of people of color in or on TV or there weren't a lot of stories about us. So we're talking about a time when Bardo was trying to move his career forward when there weren't a lot of faces of color in the business, in the industry, on television.
Oh, yeah. No, and like everybody, like, you know, I, you know, Michael Pena, who's huge now.
Yeah.
And God, what's his name? Maurice Comte, who's also doing very well. I remember doing an episode at NYPD Blue, which was one of my first guest stars.
I remember that.
But there was one of the first ones. It was a co-star, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Michael Pena was the guest star. And then me and Maurice Comte were the co-stars. And literally, we were Thugs number 1, 2, and 3. Like, that's what we were called. And we were so happy to be working. They were like, yeah, we made it.
I'm right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so even then, you know, and, like, and I'm sure it was worse before, but yeah, even when I started, and then I did Dangerous Minds, a series with our friend Maria Costa.
Maria Costa, I remember that. And, like, I was so proud of you guys.
Yeah. I was so happy to be recurring on that, playing a cholo with a shaved head called Flaco.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because literally, I mean, to be, I
well,
made it.
A lot
I mean,
of truth I'm guest starring right now. A lot of truth.
I'm guest starring on an ABC show. You know what I mean? That's what I looked at. And, you know, I beat out all the other guys at the audition. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the only one there.
Yeah.
And because, as you know me, I was a skater. I had never been a bad guy, ever.
Yeah.
You know, I was never a gangbanger. You know, I stopped hanging out with people who got into that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for that reason. So for me, it was still, I was acting.
Yeah.
You know, even though the producers or some of them might have thought it came easy to me because I'm brown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was never a gangbanger. You know
right,
what I mean?
Neither one of us.
I was never a gangbanger, so or nothing close to it.
Well, I want to share, you know, when we were that age, I was working for the Los Angeles Opera, and we were teaching opera to, they had a cultural program where they're going in and teaching opera to inner city kids in different schools. And like, they wrote this opera, back in the day, they had those domes for the homeless people. And there was this gentleman, with black gentleman with long braids, I can't remember his name, but his his girlfriend produced Blade Runner. So they decided, opera was created. Then I was hired to go in and teach. And then one of the lead characters was a cholo.
Mm-hmm.
So I was the assistant director. The director's like, Amory, can you go teach that guy to walk like a cholo? And I'm like, what?
Yeah.
You know what I'm
you
like?
No, you're brown. You know
yeah,
how to
you're
do
brown,
that.
You're Mexican, you're from South Carolina. You know, I'm like, I can tell him how to stand like a zoot suiter, but I don't know how to tell him, you know, but I had to like go and watch my, go watch people and then come back and teach them.
Yeah.
But the assumption.
Yeah. It's okay, man. You know that.
Yeah.
So that's
so
the thing.
So go back to you. Yeah.
So that's the funny thing. Like a lot of times you'll see these, you know, gangbangers. You play, when you're of color and you play a bad guy, they automatically assume, you know, hey, it's got to come natural to them, you know, which is getting, so you don't get as much credit. You know what I mean? And for me, it was really acting. So when I got a gangbanger role or when I got a bad guy role, I mean, I was stoked because I was like, dude, I've never been that. Like, that's really acting
and
for
I
me.
And I want to really focus on this. You're acting because, you know, the institutional racism that's happening with this share right now is like, you are Mexican, you're brown, you're from here, so you're going to be a gang member. And what you're saying, it's like, you're not acting. You are this. So it should be easy for you. And I really want to highlight that this is not, that was not who you were.
No.
That's not who you are now. So you are literally acting and losing credits because you are acting.
Yeah.
Which is.
That's it.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. And then, but the funny thing is now it's completely reversed. Like now I can go in there and act my ass off and I'm not going to get the job. You know why? Because they're hiring the real gangbangers now.
That's true. Oh yeah, they are.
Yeah. Real gangbangers act now. So. I mean, they do. They have their agent. Come, my agent, fool. Yeah. Like, I mean, I lose to real gangbangers all the time.
Well, I just watched El Chicano, right?
Yeah.
And they
You didn't see me in that fucking movie, did you?
No, I didn't. Because I was like, why is it?
I didn't even fucking audition for that movie. Yeah.
The circle of friends that we have that do these roles, they, none of you guys were in there. It was a whole, but like, there was a scene they shot in Islos, and I'm like, that's legit gangster right there. It's like, you know.
No, they all have agents now. Yeah. I mean, you know, which, hey, God bless them. Yeah. I mean, I'd rather have them acting than doing whatever else they were doing.
You
know? So I love it. You know, I'm losing work, but it's like, I can't. That's the other thing. If you ask me, if you want to know how do you survive in this business.
And yeah, that's a question
the
I want
hardest
to ask
thing you know, to overcome is not getting jaded.
Okay.
You know, okay. That's really the toughest thing. I mean, to stay, you know, stay positive, stay optimistic, and, you know, and keep going. Although I told you earlier that I passed on an audition, right?
Yeah, you did.
Yeah, okay. Which is also another lesson, too.
It's a business. Yeah. It's a business. So let's talk about that. So yeah. Acting is a business. It's a very intimate business. So you become an actor, and what's the process? You're going to audition, get rejected. Talk a little bit about that. So people who are listening and want to get into acting, I want them to understand what the process is and how it can hit your psyche and your and who you are and how you have to work with all that stuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just go just because it's fresh in my heart still. And literally this happened about a month and a half ago. And I still wake up like angry about it. I mean, because like...
Okay. Let's talk about it.
I tested for a network series. Okay. You know? I mean, I went to networks. It was between me and two other guys. And I mean, I thought I was the guy. They said I was the guy. Let's go back to the process. So here's the thing, kids. So you get a casting call, right? So there's this thing for this role. My agent says, hey.
Thank you, because that's what I want to talk about.
My agent says, hey, you have an audition for this series regular role. Mm-hmm. All right. For CBS, ABC, NBC, whatever. The top three, of course, are more money, right?
Of course. Okay. Yeah.
So like you have this audition series regular. So then the casting director doesn't want to see you. It's, it happens all the time. Okay. I was like, okay, cool. I said, well, get me a pre-read. You know, and granted, I've been doing this, you know, for 24 years and, you know, and they still won't see you guys. You know, they'll be like, nah, I don't think he's right. And that's it. You hit a wall. But I've read the role. I was like, no, I'm really right for it. I know this. Just get me in the door. So you go read for the casting director. Mm-hmm. I go two scenes in. She goes, I'm sorry, Lombardo. It's awesome. You're going to producers. Cool.
Okay. So like first interview, you're going to the second interview.
Yeah, going to producers now. Okay. So I passed the casting director, right? Okay. So now she's going to bring me in to meet the producers. So I go in to meet the producers. Kill it. They love me. You get a call. You're going to studio test. You know,
okay.
Studio test, and they're pinning you. That's another thing they like to say right now. We're pinning you for the shooting dates, which doesn't get you excited.
What does that mean?
That means we're tentatively hiring you. We're telling you, we're not going to hire you.
That's fucked up.
I'm telling you.
Like this and like,
So they're dangling that carrot, man. They're like, hey, but they pin me and two other guys. Okay. You know, that's the thing. So three of us are up for it, but we're letting you. We're going to need one of you for this period of time of work. Okay? So you get excited. Ooh, I'm testing studio test. So you go to studio test. Now, I went to studio test, and here's another little unknown secret about Hollywood. Like, they don't say, when you go to test and there's three of you waiting or whatever, four, what they do, and maybe they don't do it anymore because they know, but what they'll do is if you're the first one in, you're the choice. Or if you're the last one in, you're the choice.
Oh. Uh-huh. A lot of this is like interviewing for a job,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. So what screwed me at studio test was like, because they kept telling me I was a choice and everything. I'm standing there, and they call this other guy in first. So instantly, like, I try not to panic. But yes, I'm like, damn it. And it got in my head a little bit. And I went in, and even though, because, you know, I'm thinking back, because it took me a while. Well, what went wrong? And that's what it was. You know, I had to figure out, because I have to grow. I have to get better.
Yeah.
So that will not bother me again. So, but you know, I'm 46, still learning.
Yeah.
So yeah, he went in first and I knew, oh, and he got laughs. Now here's the other thing that you got to know.
Oh yeah, because you're sitting outside.
Yeah, I'm sitting outside.
This is all psychological warfare going on right now.
Exactly, psychological warfare, but also too, you got to think about, the three of us are reading the exact same material, right? Mm-hmm. So that first guy gets the fresh read, he gets the fresh ears.
Yeah.
So does. I got to follow him and do the exact same shit. I'm not going to get the same laughs. They just saw it.
Yeah.
So it makes sense, right? Yeah. So think about the third guy.
Yeah.
Now he's going to go in after they've seen two people.
Yeah. But the fourth guy's like, fuck it. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, no, of course. Everyone made different choices and stuff like that, but the material is the same.
Right.
You know, so yeah, the first guy that goes in, that's the choice. Come on.
Yeah.
Let's go. So anyways, I did make it to network, you know, and I got a call from the guy. The point of the story is I didn't get it, guys.
Yeah,
I didn't get it, and you're gonna go through times where it hit me really hard. I mean, because I this story took what, I don't know, 2 minutes.
Yeah,
the process they dragged us out is 2 weeks. So think of that in your head for 2 weeks. Yeah. You know, the stress, having a mortgage, having three kids.
Yeah,
you know, watching those accounts
go down. Potential money.
Potential money for 2 weeks.
Yeah, and the no money.
It's and like, every day, and you can't sleep, and you're waking up, and you're running it in your head over and over. Yeah. Is it good enough? Oh, what should I add? Anything? No. I mean, you know, you can literally drive yourself crazy.
I'm so glad that you're sharing this. I really am, because this is like, this is humanity and this is a human factor that we all go through. And this is a vulnerability. And in vulnerability, I think there's strength more than there is weakness. So I really thank you and applaud you for sharing this, because we, as people of color and just people and human beings, need to understand that we're not machines. We're going to have ups and downs, and it's okay to worry.
Yeah.
It's not a strength.
It is okay. Yeah. And like, and right on top of that, the funny thing is the next day when I didn't get it, I mean, I was distraught. I mean,
yeah,
I was crushed. And then Terry took it even harder because she knows what they put us through.
Yeah.
Not only that, but she's got to watch the kids while I'm rehearsing,
yeah,
going to the auditions, boom, she knows what I'm going through.
You guys are a team.
Yeah, we're a team. Mm-hmm. So she was crushed.
Yeah. And she loves you.
So the next day, the star of the show, who's one of the executive producers, calls me and very nonchalantly says, "Hey, Lombardo, how are you, man?" Like that. And I'm like, not good, man.
Yeah.
Not good.
Yeah.
Oh, and I laid into it. It was funny. I mean, just, you caught me fresh. I mean, yeah. I'm hurt.
Yeah.
And I wasn't going to sugarcoat it. He's like, Lombardo. He's like, oh, how are you? I said, not good, man. What happened?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, what do you mean? I said, well, I thought I was your choice.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, you were my choice. I mean, I was one of the executives. Unfortunately, I don't have the power to, you know, say I want you. I said, okay, cool. I said, did you say you won't do it without me?
Ah!
Woo!
The hood tactics. No, yeah,
I mean, the thing is, you know, I gotta be me.
Yeah. We've just finished podcast one with Bardo. Tune in for part two to find out what happens next. Don't forget, come back and listen to part two with Lombardo Boyar, actor, father, man who curses, and has a fantastic laugh. Tune in. Part two coming at you soon.